From National Public Radio, it's Latino USA.
It's a new day. It's been a long time coming. Up the mountain, kept running.
Expectations are high for President-elect Barack Obama, and change can't seem to come soon enough for the millions who voted for him.
One person can make history, but also when we look at it, people make history in terms of transformation of society.
And some are saying it's a new day for race relations, but the legacy of racism continues to affect communities of color.
We have a tendency of these most toxic facilities concentrated in these communities. Nobody deserves exposure of toxic chemicals that are cancerous.
And a conversation with veteran percussionist Eric Bobo. This and more coming up on Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. No se vayan. Joining us to discuss the news affecting the Latino community is Maria Elena Salinas, national news anchor for Univision, the Spanish language television network. Hey, Maria Elena.
Hi, Maria. Nice to talk to you.
Hey, good. So listen, let's start with an interesting story out of the city where you live, Miami. An immigrant rights group in southern Florida wrote President-elect Barack Obama asking him to intervene and to curb immigration raids. 2 days after that, Immigration and Customs Enforcement officials arrested 111 undocumented immigrants in a raid. So how is this read in the city of Miami and in southern Florida?
It's seen in Miami the same way it's seen everywhere else. And Barack Obama said it best during his first press conference in Chicago the other day. In our country, there's only one president at a time. Right now, the president is George W. Bush. So we can't expect anything to change in immigration as long as this administration is in office. So let's remember that immigration authorities have long said that, you know, when they do these raids, they're following what is mandated by Congress. They're following orders given by the State Department, given by the Department of Homeland Security. So there's not likely to be any changes. Now, one thing that was different about the series of raids here in Florida is that the undocumented immigrants that were arrested were from over a dozen different countries, and the raids were spread out across the state. So it's not exactly just hitting on Latin Americans in one workplace, but just spread across. But, you know, it seems, Maria, that as far as ICE is concerned, it's business as usual.
Is it realistic when Barack Obama, you know, assumes the presidency? Do you think that he will be able to have the power to say, you know, we're going to hold off on these raids? Is it completely unrealistic? Does he have any executive power? Is it a matter of tone? What are your thoughts on this?
Remember that during the campaign, it was not politically convenient to talk about anything that had to do with immigration. So it's unclear what he's going to do. But one thing he has committed to is pushing for an immigration reform bill the first year, even though in some interviews recently he has said he has not mentioned immigration as one of his priorities. Now, whether it's realistic or not, we have to remember that right now Democrats have a mandate. They have a majority in both the House and the Senate. And they have a Democratic president. So there's no excuses. They cannot now blame Republicans for not being able to pass immigration reform. So there are already several organizations that are reminding President-elect Barack Obama. And there is one group in particular that is even asking for a moratorium on these raids and asking him to do the one thing that he can do, which is to sign an executive order to try to put a stop to the raids until immigration reform is discussed in Congress.
All right, Maria Elena, something is changing, though, with an organization that could be seen as somewhat unlikely as getting involved in the issue of undocumented immigrants, specifically undocumented children. Microsoft has launched a new initiative to provide free legal services to undocumented children facing deportation. Angelina Jolie has been tapped as the spokesperson, and it's called Kids in Need of Defense. And organizations and law firms around the country are getting involved with this to help with some of the 8,000 children who were defenseless and undocumented and involved with legal proceedings. So tell us a little bit more about this story.
Well, you know, it's an interesting story. It's a pilot program, and, you know, it's catching people's attention because of this initiative that by the private sector. And Angelina Jolie as a spokesperson, star power always attracts attention. We know that much. This is a pilot program, I think, that's already been working in Washington State, but they have been spreading it out now to the rest of the country. Now, we have to remember that these kids, they're the most vulnerable of immigrants. You're talking about kids from all over the world. Most of them are from Central America, they're Latin American kids. They either escaped from violence or they came over looking for their family members. Most of them, when they come here, they don't necessarily come by choice. You know, some of them are sent over with coyotes, and they end up being caught in the middle of a very, very complex immigration system. And I guess this program by Microsoft, you know, with Angelina Jolie, is trying to help provide legal assistance to these kids who really cannot help themselves. And they're trying to get them not to be deported. And if they are deported, they want to make sure that they're turned over to a responsible adult, because right now when a minor is detained, they're put in foster care. And if they can't find family members in their home country, they're turned over to those governments. So, you know, it is something that hopefully will help some of these children. We're talking about kids that are anywhere from 3 years old all the way to 17, 18. A lot of them are preteens and teens.
Well, we shall see, Maria Elena. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Maria.
Maria Elena Salinas is the national news anchor for Univision, the Spanish language television network. It's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. Blacks have worked there. A few even lived there for a time. And history remembers the slaves who carried the stones that built the White House. And so, this week, the images of President-elect Barack Obama and his wife Michelle arriving at the White House were powerful. We wanted to speak to a longtime Washingtonian, a writer and politician, so we called E. Ethelbert Miller, the city's unofficial poet laureate. Welcome to Latino USA, Ethelbert.
Oh, thank you for the invitation.
So I was just remembering the very first time I met you was when I had just arrived in Washington, D.C. for my very first job at NPR, and Ronald Reagan was taking office at that time. What is Washington, D.C. like now with the reality of a president-elect Barack Obama moving to Washington?
Well, the city has really changed from the Reagan years. You know, I think D.C. has become very, very diverse. You know, we've had a lot of changing neighborhoods in terms of gentrification and development. Many young people have come to the area. I think that when you look at what Obama represents to this generation, I think he somewhat complements what has been going on in the city the last few years. I think people are really excited, and it seems like everyone wants to come to the inauguration on January 20th. So with that type of excitement and people realizing that this is a historical moment, the city is going to be just flooded with people. I call it the new migration.
Well, bringing up the issue of migration, Ethelbert, so when you walk around the streets of Washington, what about the Latino immigrants? What are you picking up? What's their vibe, Ethelbert?
Well, I tell you, I don't drive, so I'm usually using public transportation. The day after, I'm taking the 70 bus. You could just feel the energy. Everybody's saying, excuse me. You know, everybody had their paper out. You know, there was a real warmth, like, you know, we did this as a community. And one thing I would really underscore in terms of, you know, we go through these historical moments where we see our societies being transformed. But, you know, down the road, there's still a lot of work we have to do. You know, I would really hope that something like this, which is very positive between the Latino and the African-American community, would carry over into areas where I think we need to do a lot of work. One would be within the prison system. So that's one of the things I'm looking at, you know, in terms of, you know, on a grassroots level.
So is there a sense right now, Ethelbert, amongst your cultural activist friends, amongst your political friends, both Democrats and Republicans, that right now is a time of, even though we're in this incredible economic downturn, but that people are thinking about launching new projects that, you know, maybe might have seemed impossible before. So is it a sense of like new minds coming to tackle old problems and the possibility of actually creating change?
That's a funny question for me to answer because, you know, I'm chair of the board of the Institute for Policy Studies, and we have our annual board meeting that begins on Thursday. So this is something that, you know, when we sit around our conference table, you know, the end of this week, we're going to be looking at that. One of the things I've been, you know, challenging people at the Institute for Policy Studies is that now that we've made history, the question now or the challenge that we have is how do we stay ahead of history? you know, and in terms of our responsibility to build on what we have seen that has taken place. And for those of us who are really concerned about progressive social change, when we see this opening or this light that we see here that has manifested itself, we have to embrace it, and we have to really realize that, you know, one person can make history, but also when we look at it, people make history in terms of real solid history, in terms of transformation of society. So, you know, you celebrate, you know, Obama's achievement, but you use that in terms of whatever issue you're involved with on a grassroots level, you try to work a little bit harder.
Ethelbert, just finally, you wrote a poem about a slave who lived at the White House.
Elizabeth Keckley.
I wonder if by any chance you have a bit of that poem that you might recite to us or tell us a little bit about.
No, I don't have it in front of me, but I tell you what I was joking about. I was blogging about this. You know, Elizabeth Keckley, I think she lived 30 years as a slave, 4 years in the White House. So I was changing that to 300 years of slaves and 4 years in the White House, you know, in terms of black people. But someone like Elizabeth Keckley probably will receive more attention because keep in mind that Obama's presidency, beginning next year, will coincide with the Lincoln Bicentennial. And so when we look at, you know, our past and we look at our what has happened, it's really remarkable. So I think that when Obama and Michelle Obama, you know, retire to the Lincoln bedroom, I think there's it's a real irony there in terms of, wow, look where we are. You know, we're not in the field anymore. We're in a big house that happens to be white.
Ethelbert Miller, thank you so much for joining us on Latino USA. Good to talk to you.
Oh, it's always good. Thank you, Maria.
E. Ethelbert Miller is chair of the board of the Institute for Policy Studies, the director of the Afro-American Studies Resource Center at Howard University, and editor of Poet Lore magazine. The election of Barack Obama has raised one significant question that has no easy answer. Is racism really over with? Clearly, the effects of racism can still be found in communities across the country, be it in access to education, to healthcare, or even to clean air. One area that's particularly polluted can be found near the ports of the city of Los Angeles. Emissions from thousands of ships, diesel trucks and locomotives cause asthma, coronary diseases, and cancer in these largely Latino communities. Recently, the port authorities implemented a new Clean Air Action Plan that in just 5 years could cut emissions in half. But as Klaus Andreasen reports, residents still remain wary.
For the past 7 years, Bernice Benares has taught at Cabrillo High School. This is her first day back at work from having spent another couple of days in the hospital because of her asthma, something many of her students also chronically suffer from. For Bernice, there's no doubt in her mind that it's caused by emissions from diesel-powered trucks.
They're right here on PCH, not even a quarter mile away, and the trucks are going by all day long.
Every day, 17,000 trucks drive by on the freeways near Bernice's school. It's traffic generated by the two shipping ports in San Pedro Bay. The Port of Long Beach and the Port of Los Angeles both operate here, and together, they're the fifth busiest port in the world. According to the South Coast Air Quality Management District, emissions from the ports not only cause asthma, but also coronary diseases and cancer. Pollution levels in Greater Los Angeles have actually declined in the past decade, but in the vicinity of the ports, it has increased by 17%. Susan Nakamura is planning manager at the Regional Air Quality District.
There's been an increase in and around the ports in the health risk, while other areas of the basin have shown decreases in the health risk. So it is of concern.
Angelo Logan works for the East Yard Communities for Environmental Justice, grassroots organization that was founded in the neighborhoods nearest to the ports.
The higher concentrations of toxic facilities, you tend to have communities that are working class, working poor, communities of color.
With the ports generating more than $260 billion a year in trade, Angelo says the concern of the communities are often overlooked, so they organized and called on city and state governments to demand cleaner ports.
Nobody deserves exposure of toxic chemicals that are cancerous. But yet, what we see is we have a tendency of these most toxic facilities concentrated in these communities.
At Pier F in the port of Long Beach, an enormous container ship from Hong Kong is being unloaded. The port's spokesman, John Pope, and I duck as yet another one of the ship's nearly 8,000 containers pass by over our heads.
A ship like this, you can have 4 to 5 cranes working at a time, and a ship like this can be unloaded in about 3 or 4 days.
Every year, more than 8,000 ships visit the ports of Long Beach and Los Angeles. The ships are the single biggest source of pollution. They usually run on a cheap fuel called bunker oil. The ships pollute not only as they enter or leave the port, but also at berth, where they run their engines to power elevators or cooling units on board. But in response to complaints from the community and increasing threats of legislation, the two port authorities have adopted the new Clean Air Action Plan. By 2009, ships will no longer be able to use the dirtiest fuels, and while at shore, they will now have to reduce emissions even further. One technique is called sock on a stack.
The sock on a stack technology actually captures the emissions from the smokestack, and what we've seen is a 90% or better reduction in emission from this system.
Another way of dealing with emissions at berth is to provide the ship with shoreside electricity. All trucks older than 1989 were recently banned from the ports. And in 5 years, no trucks older than model year 2007 will be allowed.
Our environmental scientists have estimated that that will clean up about half the pollution right off the bat because the older models are so highly polluting.
Truckers are offered a grant to buy a new cleaner burning vehicle, but many independent truckers still cannot afford to buy a new truck. Alexander Palma is one of them. Alexander is typically paid $45 to drive the container some 10 miles up the freeway.
No, not enough for sure. It's very hard to make a living on these wages.
Alexander is himself a Long Beach resident. He knows the air quality is bad and that he is partly to blame for it.
I understand that we're part of the problem. I mean, but it's the way this thing has been all this time, you know. But now that the port has come with this plan and they want cleaner trucks, well, it's okay. It's fine, you know. Let's make the ones that really make the money responsible for it.
The new plan calls for cutting the emissions by half in just 5 years. Susan Nakamura with the Air Quality Management District is hopeful the ports will meet their goal.
I do think the ports will achieve it, but we have to maintain the pressure.
High school teacher Bernice Benares is also hopeful, yet she has let her principal know that this might be her last year at Cabrillo High.
We have teachers and staff who cover their cars during the day while they're parked here because by the time you leave at the end of the day, there's a film of a gray, sticky dust on your car. If that's what it's like on my car in one day, I've been working here for 7 years.
For Latino USA, this is Klaus Andreasen in Long Beach, California.
In a minute, The Meeting of the Minds, a new album by hip-hop and Latin percussionist veteran Eric Bobo, coming up on Latino USA. Stay with us.
Support for Latino USA comes from Caso Bracero. Benefits are available to braceros who worked in the U.S. from 1942 to 1946, or their survivors in the U.S. Information at 877-436-9359 or casobracero.com.
Yeah.
You're listening to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. On this program, when we feature an artist's debut album, usually the performer is young, just starting out in the music business, and not always well-known. But master percussionist Eric Bobo is the exception that proves the rule. The son of legendary conguero Willie Bobo, Eric Bobo first took the stage at the age of 5, and at 15 took over his dad's Latin jazz band when Willie Bobo passed away in 1983. Since then, Eric Bobo has been a member of the Beastie Boys and Cypress Hill, the first platinum-selling Latin hip-hop group in history. He's also been a first-call session player for artists as diverse as Carlos Santana, Ella Fitzgerald, and the Black Crowes. Now, better late than never, Bobo has released his debut album, Meeting of the Minds, which truly puts together all the musical worlds that Eric has known throughout his career. Eric Bobo joins me now on the program. Welcome to Latino USA, Eric.
Thank you very much for having me.
Eric, so when do you remember, because you are such an accomplished musician and your dad, of course, was an extraordinary musician in his own right. So when do you remember first playing music?
Well, I do remember my very first live performance. I was 5 years old. It was at a club in L.A. called Dante's. It no longer exists. And I remember they had to put my dad had to put the timbales to the lowest, but it still was not, you know, low enough. So I had to play on a stool.
I like to bring up to the bandstand a young fellow that I'm very proud of. I've been hanging out with him for quite some years. And I'm speaking of my younger son, Eric.
My dad really never gave me lessons all right, this is how you do it. You know, he just saw how it kind of grew within me, you know, and how I gravitated to, you know, playing and banging around stuff and everything.
So your break into hip-hop in the early 1990s comes with none other than the Beastie Boys. You really, in a lot of ways, helped to shape the genre. I mean, you were playing with the Beastie Boys. Then you played with another seminal group, Cypress Hill, who were one of the first all-Latino groups to use Spanish in their lyrics. I be the papa with the fine hood, rat in the rafla. Always roll deep on the streets like the mafia. Wait though, Jez might come back and haunt ya. Flossing too much, the bottle's gonna watch ya. Eric Bobo, you're now releasing your first solo album that's called The Meeting of the Minds. And it's like taking hip-hop to a new level, one that really highlights that Latinos are now really big in hip-hop. In fact, many of them appear on this album, like the song Fiesta, with an MC named Kimo the Blaxican.
Kimo is a combination of black and Mexican. So putting the blacks again together, that's so clever. But he really identifies with his Latin side. And the thing that was really great with the track is that he was already doing something with Cultura Londres, and they're from London. Songs like that, that you have these combinations of people, that's the essence of Meeting of the Minds, you know, kind of putting it all together, really bridging, you know, a gap.
So we talked about the evolution of hip-hop, and one place where it's taken an interesting turn is in the large cities of northern Mexico. There's a kind of blended hip-hop with cumbia, which comes from Colombia. So it was really great to hear you do a song with Sonidero Nacional. That's one of the groups that's essentially leading the movement in Mexico. What's your thought about the fact that hip-hop is now so international and that, you know, you can essentially hear a lot of that on your song, Mucho Calor?
Well, it's great because being able to travel and perform, you know, all over the world and to see how hip-hop has really grown, you know, something that a lot of, you know, people and a lot of executives thought would just be a passing fad is now, you know, it's a mainstay of the world, you know, no matter where you go. And the thing about it, like with this, is like, you know, I'm able to see, you know, that kind of influence and how it is with different types of music.
What I love about your CD, Eric Bobo, is that you're kind of like the sound of the future. I mean, essentially, it's as if the lines between race, culture, music, even class, they start to disappear, like the song Aquí Estoy. Do you see yourself like that?
You have to make music for the world. That's what I think. I've never looked at it as just you're making music for, you know, your homies, you know, your family. Every musician, every writer, every singer, they want to be heard by the world. And if you give them, you know, your passion and your soul, you know, you're going to get that. You can get heard.
Eric Bobo, thank you so much for speaking with us on Latino USA.
Thank you very much for having me.
Eric Bobo's new album, The Meeting of the Minds, is available from Nacional Records. Production support for Latino USA comes from KUT Radio, the Center for Mexican American Studies, the University of Texas at Austin, the William and Salome Scanlon Foundation of Austin and San Antonio, and the Marguerite Casey Foundation. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Join us again next week for NPR's Latino USA.
Support for NPR is provided by the Department of Homeland Security, offering E-Verify, confirming the legal working status of new hires, at dhs.gov/e-verify. And the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live a healthy, productive life. Details are at gatesfoundation.org. And by Lumber Liquidators, Hardwood, Bamboo, and Cork Flooring. Catalog at 1-800-FLOORING. This is NPR, National Public Radio.